So my presentation today, my title is Unmasking Inequities, the Role of Community Health Workers in Elevating and Addressing Neighborhood Health Needs That Are Masked by Zip Code. So we've heard from our panel today, the neighborhood that you're in can definitely impact access to resources, can impact health outcomes. And what I'm here to talk a little bit about is a specific example of a clinic, a safety net community center, implementing a program from this recognition of differential outcomes based on geographic specificity. So I have no relationships to disclose. And so my session objectives, I have them listed here, but essentially I wanted to take an opportunity to describe, so now that we know this, now that we know that the neighborhood that you're in can potentially impact your health outcomes, what can you do? What are some steps that you can do? And so I'm going to talk a little bit about a program that the clinic developed called the Western Addition Health Training Program, or WHAT program, that both combines community outreach and leadership development as a way to elevate the needs of this specific community, which is the Western Addition in San Francisco. Any San Francisco folks in here today? Yeah, all right. So I want to take you back to give you some history and context about the Western Addition. So the Western Addition is a really fascinating community in San Francisco, fascinating neighborhood that has a really diverse, varied history. In some sense, it's been called the Harlem of the West, and so it's a community that had a high population of Chinese residents, Japanese residents, African-American residents, really diverse, and it was essentially a Western Addition of San Francisco. It was also where San Francisco was able to kind of silo immigrants, working class people, and people of color. And so the community itself was mostly a Jewish residential community, and then transitioned into mostly having Japanese residents. And then with the internments around the 1950s, a lot of Japanese residents were displaced. So after World War II, there was a big influx of African Americans from the South who came to San Francisco to work at the shipyards. And so that's sort of the history that the community often has. This idea of, you know, the vibrancy, the music, there were jazz clubs everywhere, you know, legends, and you see pictures of Duke Ellington and Billie Holiday all taking residence in the Western Addition. And a lot of the community, a lot of the businesses, a lot of the houses were also black owned. So I always say that the Western Addition is at the nexus of two really fascinating identities. One that is this sort of vibrant, rich cultural history that's embedded in music. And the other that is tied to the impacts of urban renewal. So this is actually taken from one of the edicts that came around validating the reasons for urban renewal. So the Western Addition is not white. It is gray, brown, and an indeterminate shade of dirty black. It is an unfortunate blot. And, you know, later in the line, they talk about Pacific Heights, which is a neighboring community that's mostly a white community, and they talk about Pacific Heights being clean and bright. So even under the guise of community redevelopment was this really strong undertone of racism, this really strong undertone that communities that had high densities of communities of color, particularly African-American communities, were blighted. And so part of what you see depicted is some of the impacts of urban renewal. So in about a 20-year period, there are about estimates from 8,000 to 10,000 black Western Addition residents who were displaced, so people who were literally just asked to leave their homes and were given a little check that, you know, once this is developed, you can come back. 50, 60 years later, people are still waiting to cash in on those little checks that they can come back. So a lot of Victorians were moved. There were lots that were just completely empty for a good amount of time. But what it also did was it spurred a huge sense of activism within the community. So the Western Addition today, so on the left I have depicted two housing complexes. So you can imagine when communities, the community dynamic was completely disrupted. So, you know, in the past you had this great sense of community where the doctor lived next to the storefront owner, lived next to the garbage man, and, you know, you saw the same people who were going to schools. There was just a really strong sense of identity for this community. And so with all of the members and the residents displaced, that sense of community was really broken. And in place for a lot of those black-owned businesses and homes, the city erected housing projects. So we know what happens. You silo communities of color into tiny, tiny square inch of a city, and then you kind of see what happens, and you suddenly just pretend that they don't exist. So these are at the top is Plaza East, also known as Eddie Rock OC, and Buchanan Parks. And to the right is the also sort of what I call the gentrifying Western Addition today. So we've got lots of fancy cafes. The Western Addition has so many different names. So there's NOPA and Hayes Valley. I heard something new I hadn't heard the other day about like something corridor. So, you know, any possible name that a real estate agent can assign to a community to sort of displace and disconnect it from its history. So the average, I was shocked to learn this, the average income of new residents who are coming into the Western Addition is about $120,000. And so you all know San Francisco, we're nuts, right? Like there was just this new report that came out that we have the highest rents in the entire country. You know, a two-bedroom goes for $4,000, right? So the folks who are coming in are the Twitters and the Google folks who just have a lot of income to spend. So you can imagine what that's happening and how that's changing the geographic makeup of the makeup of the community for those people who maybe are having incomes that are $25,000. So the Western Addition today is really at this intersection of differing identities. And so for us at the clinic, it was really important to think about how can we make sure that we're not only valuing and ensuring the history of this community, but making it a place where young black children can see themselves as part of the growth and the development of the Western Addition. So I also wanted to illustrate the Western Addition today. This is an income map. So as you can see, the purple and the blues denote high and middle income, and the orange is very low income. So the Western Addition is also really interesting because of its zip code, 94115. It shares a zip code with neighboring affluent communities that then it makes the appearance of income and resources really distorted. So what you have is you actually have a high density of low socioeconomic status, access to resources, and high density of poverty that's surrounded by high economic status. And so what happens because of these sharing of zip codes is that resources is often allocated by zip code. So you actually have this community where the median income looks like it's $70,000 being passed over by state and city funding. And so that small population of folks who are living significantly under the poverty limit become even more under-resourced. So in comes my organization, the Women's Community Clinic. We're a sexual and reproductive health clinic in San Francisco. We see about 5,000 women annually, which is about 7,500 clinical visits. And we provide, this is our staff, I also like to share the mission of the clinic. The mission of the Women's Community Clinic is to improve the health and well-being of women and girls. So we have a variety of programming at the clinic. I always say that I love the fact that the clinic really identifies with the civil rights era's vision of what a safety net health center can be. So not only are we providing direct sexual and reproductive clinical services, we also have different partnerships with various universities in San Francisco. We provide integrated behavioral health. We offer a variety of workforce development programs, and we also provide outreach. So the WHAT program. So the WHAT program is essentially, consists of two components, so health careers leadership development training and community outreach and education. And so I've listed some of the goals of the WHAT program, and it really came out of, so we moved to the neighborhood about 2.5 years ago, and there was a recognition for us that the high density of individuals who lived in the clinic who would be most likely to come use our services, we weren't seeing them. So we were trying to figure out, why is this community not accessing free health clinic that's right there? And to think about what were some of the barriers folks were addressing. And so part of what we did before we moved in is we did a mini needs assessment where we interviewed key leaders, stakeholders in different organizations, and what really came out was this lack of access to economic opportunity, issues of violence, rates of sexually transmitted infections and unintended pregnancies were significantly high for the community. So for us, we thought, well, let's think about how we can address some of these issues in these two domains. So the health careers leadership training component are health workers who we call fellows. They're with us for 2 years at the clinic. It's a paid fellowship, and they gain clinical skills. So by the end of their 2 years, they're running the clinic. They're clinic operations managers, and they're supervising and liaising with our providers, our health workers. They're also working in outreach, so they do a lot of the community-based outreach, which I'll talk about in a second, but they also work in our mission-based outreach, which works with homeless and marginally housed women who tend to be a little bit older than the population we see in the clinic or in the Western Addition, and also tend to have issues with substance use, sex work, and also history of trauma and violence. We also focus a lot on professional development and mentorship, and really the highlight on what I call soft skills. So the skills that you may not get traditionally from workforce development programs that tend to originate from big health systems or from big universities. So even things just as, you know, how do you have a check-in? The folks I supervise always make fun of me because I'm a big fan of the check-in. Communication, body language, all of those things that are actually really significantly impactful in terms of your longevity and success in the workplace. And then really creating an asset-based leadership training program that honors the stories of the women who are in the program. So here's a list of some of the things. The program has been in existence for about 5 years that we've really learned are important to success. So having a trauma-informed lens, you know, I like to say I do trauma-informed workforce development, partly because for a lot of our women who are young, urban women of color, there are a multitude of issues that come in with them when they're coming to the clinic for workforce development. So we found very quickly that we could not be impactful and effective in sort of training folks and getting these hard skills without addressing and creating space for their trauma. And so we have mental health workers who come in and do workshops. We have something called a What Friday where there's journaling, there's opportunity to process. Again, focusing on asset-based and soft skills, having a lot of self-directed leadership opportunities. So again, the women, our fellows, are the ones who are helping to direct our activities. So one thing I didn't mention is that a requirement for the fellowship is that you have to be from the Western Addition. So you have to live there currently, you have to have grown up there, have a very strong connection to the community, because again, as a new organization, we recognize we don't have the intimacy and the wisdom that a lot of the young people who we now work with do. And so it was mutually beneficial. Our fellows could come in, get this training and professional development, and we could learn as we move forward about what were the issues and the needs of the community. And then just to say a little bit something about shame narratives. So one of the things that often comes up, especially working with women of color, is this focus on shaming, even with something as positive as a workforce development program, because then the narrative becomes, you should do this to better yourself. You should do this to be better than other people in your community who are not doing this. And so for me, a lot of the success came from recognizing the strengths and the assets that each individual fellow held, but also recognizing the assets that already existed in the community and having that frame. So these are a couple of our they just graduated a couple weeks ago. And so this is one of our WUP fellows. They do something called a community impact project, which is an independent project that they take on and implement. And so this was her presentation where she looked at reproductive health status and homelessness, and a lot of their community impact projects draw from their personal experiences. So Ayana had experienced homelessness through the course of her participation in the program. And then this is Tracy, who did a community impact project on self-care. Tracy, on August 2nd, 2012, as she was walking to work at the clinic, was the victim of a shooting. And so for her, the last year has been around processing her trauma in order to move forward with her goals. And I think what was really powerful about both her presentation, but also just having the fellows in the clinic, is that there's this recognition that this is real. This is not just let's help young people in the community. The experiences and the needs of the community were really brought into the clinic. So the other big component of our work is community outreach, and I think this is where our intentionality of really working closely in the leadership development has made a big impact in our community work that has had such huge outcomes, especially around legislative advocacy. And so annually, the WUP Fellows provide outreach to about 800 women, the significant most of them who are Western Addition residents. And of those residents that we reach in the community, about 25% to 30% become clients of the clinic. So we're actually using this model of leadership development and outreach to actually get more community women into service. And again, as I mentioned, the Western Addition has one of the highest incidents of different sexually transmitted infection rates and unintended pregnancy. They also participate in our outreach program. And two of the things that I thought were so great is that they facilitated a needs assessment project over a year that gave us a lot of information. So I think that Jamie was talking about the difficulty of accessing and drawing down data from different community sources. So we have a great website called SF Matters that has a lot of the data that's related to the Healthy People 2020 markers and indicators. But oftentimes, that data is again collapsed by zip code. So you don't necessarily get a clear sense of what's actually happening in this community that's two blocks away from me. And so, what the needs assessment did, what the fellows were able to do, is actually assess what were the needs based from community members. And so they did a lot of this by going into housing. And so we found again that, you know, overwhelming majority of folks didn't have a usual source of care, were accessing care at emergency rooms, didn't have a primary care provider, and et cetera. We also participated in a cohort collective data collection, and both the needs assessment and the report that came from our cohort collective resulted in presentations to our board supervisors and our mayor, which has significantly impacted our ability to access funding to do this work. So these are the WUP Fellows with our District 5 supervisor, London Breed, and I love the fact that our District 5 supervisor just knows them, and whenever she sees them, she's like, "Oh, you guys are from the Women's Community Clinic." And so, through the work, the intentional work that was done by the WUP Fellows, we just got a $100,000 grant to expand this work in housing through the Office of Economic and Workforce Development. And we've also been able to really expand our work around Affordable Care Act outreach and enrollment. So Ayana is now our certified enrollment counselor, and so she's been actually going into housing complexes in the community to do education and to get folks enrolled on site. So here I've listed some of our successes. So you know, as you may have inferred, we started the program really small. Again, we're a small community clinic, so we wanted to sort of see what were the steps in order to create best practices around how to do this type of targeted community outreach. And so now, with what we've learned over the last 5 years, we're actually going to expand the program to work with 50 community participants annually to both do the workforce development and the training. And some of the next steps where we hope to go is that we're able to quantify and see sort of the impacts when people come into the clinic. And so we're hoping that maybe through some support and collaboration with UCSF or University of San Francisco, we're able to better target and measure what our impacts are around changing health outcomes. So thank you to all of the folks who made this possible, and thank you all so much for being here today.